Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Guidance is internal. Ignition sequence starts. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Permission to board, please.
Permission to come aboard.
Permission to board.
Permission to board.
Do I have some permission to board that sweet mothership?
This is the Permission Granted Podcast. Here's DA.
Welcome inside the PGP, the Permission Granted Podcast, the show about the show within the show. Thanks as always for joining us, and you can listen to us on our podcast platform for the PGP, the Permission Granted Podcast. You can search on podcast platforms everywhere. But also you can find this on the normal DA Show podcast feed as well. Mraz is out this week. It is me, Bogues, the usual crew, and Andrew Kaplan and Connor Green. Connor Green stepping in for Mraz this week as executive producer and as the host of Canadian Bacon. Hey, Bogues, I'm wondering, since we got that G-Chat message today during the show, do you think Mraz, that's a direct response to worry about Connor's job filling in for him this week?
I mean, there's no two ways about it. As we mentioned on the show too, DA, I mean, he closed Friday filling in for you before disconnecting the mothership. He had to tell everybody, the guests that he booked for this week, that were not going to be Connor's guests. So, I mean, he has been sweating this even going back into last week, and then Connor off and running through Monday and Tuesday's show. And just, you know, maybe just the HBO promo triggered him and he picks up his phone and sends in the G-Chat. But he is absolutely spooked by the fact that Connor is a mere baby in the grand scheme of things and is kind of running circles around him when it comes to producing the show and also mixing in a very, very talented on-air personality as well.
He was thrown a bit of a curveball today because Canadian Bacon has been about the Stanley Cup playoffs, but on Monday there were no games because of the lottery. So Connor said, okay, so I guess no Canadian Bacon for Tuesday's show. And I said, you know what? I still want to do the segment because I think it's good. I think it fits. I think it flows. Let's just do baseball instead of hockey. We could have done basketball as well, but I decided to see how he would handle baseball. And I have to say, I feel like I'm better for having heard Connor's baseball segment as well from a fan standpoint, because I'm watching basketball. I'm paying attention to the college football landscape. But Connor gave me some juice in the baseball segment. I almost wonder if that could be a daily segment.
I mean, I don't want to put too much on Sean's plate, but maybe that is what Connor gets to do every day. Maybe that's Connor's reward for being Connor, is that he can do some kind of baseball version of that, because I mean, he's landed DA more quality jokes in 2 days,
yeah.
Unofficially, I'd have to really go back and go through the tape, but I've laughed more in Connor's 2 days than I did in Sean's 5 last week. Sean tried a couple of ones that just didn't land. Connor's been nearly flawless joke wise through these first 2 days. So, I mean, he's earned more mic time one way or the other.
I think you're right. And you know, he's one of these young guys that you got to find time for. You got to find minutes for. It's kind of like TJ Warren inside the bubble. If you're going to keep exploding, we've got to try to find minutes for him. And when Mraz comes back, it'd be crazy not to find minutes for Connor, wouldn't you say?
Well, let me use a Mets example. Connor is Andrés Giménez, and maybe Sean is now some amalgamation of Robinson Cano and Dominic Smith, and he's got to move around and DH a little bit because Giménez slash Connor needs to be in the lineup, you know, 5 days a week at this point. He can hit. He's a plus defender. He's got some speed. He's got some spunk. He's young, but he's also mature. I mean, he is, it sounds like Connor in a baseball uniform.
It does. And he's making his presence felt in a big way this week. We're going to review Field of Dreams coming up here this weekend. This is going to be the rare PGP where we actually tape before the movie analysis. But I wanted to use this opportunity to ask you, there's two ways a lot of people go with Field of Dreams. Either they absolutely love it, one of their favorite movies of all time, and probably their favorite baseball movie of all time, or it's sappy, unrealistic, and stupid, and they hate it. There really isn't a lot of in-between. Where do you usually go with Field of Dreams?
I mean, it's not my favorite baseball movie. Bull Durham's my favorite baseball movie, and I probably even like Major League more than Field of Dreams, but I like Field of Dreams. Now, I'm open, as always, for the possibility of maybe feeling different this time around, because I don't remember the last time I watched it uninterrupted, start to finish. But I mean, it is, so no matter how good it is, it does have that one ridiculous oversight where, you know, Shoeless Joe Jackson is the wrong hand, which I don't understand how they made a movie with that kind of oversight. but no, I mean, it's not The Natural, which we universally destroyed on this show. It is not going to disappoint me and bother me like The Natural did from the very first viewing. I'm definitely a pro Field of Dreams guy.
I am too, and I would say it's one of my favorite baseball films ever. I mean, I guess Major League I love, but for different reasons. It's obviously kind of a slapstick comedy with cartoonish characters, and it's really a real fun movie start to finish. Field of Dreams is more nostalgic and wistful, and I don't know.
It's a film.
Yes.
It's a film. It's not a movie.
And it taps into the kind of mysticism surrounding baseball and dead baseball players and the legends of the game and what have you. So I love it. Love it, love it, love it. So I'm excited to review it. But I'm always surprised when people say, like, they hate it, it's corny, it's stupid, because, I don't know, like, Costner's great in it. James Earl Jones is great in it. The story is really cool and fun. And everything about it, I guess, unless you're really, really cynical, to me, just makes it a great sports film. And so I'm always like, I don't know if I can respect you if you hate Field of Dreams. I've been accused of having a cold heart every so often, but I feel like you got to have a really, really cold heart to hate Field of Dreams.
I mean, there's good sappy and there's bad sappy. You can fail at being sappy and then sappy becomes cheesy. This movie's sappy. I mean, there's no two ways about it, but it's the right type of sappy. It makes you sad. It makes you nostalgic. It makes you think about, you know, family and dad and love and relationships. And I think for the most part, it hits the mark on all those things. If you really don't like this movie, like, I could even accept you being lukewarm or not being super high on your list of baseball movies. But if you, like, don't like it strongly, that's on you and not on the movie.
Yeah, because the film itself is what it is. It doesn't have plot holes. You do have to suspend disbelief. I mean, Shoeless Joe Jackson has to come back from the dead and walk through a cornfield and come play baseball with you. Okay, yes. But for what it is, it executes, to me, nearly flawlessly. Now, over the weekend, I took the long weekend. As we know, summer Fridays for DA, I'm out of here. And the wife and I went up to one of the lakes in upstate New York. And we went to one of the lakes around Rochester, New York. And this was my first job, my first commercial job, my first broadcasting gig, if you will, was student radio at Syracuse. And I had been named sports director. So in some ways it was a job. Like, I got, I think, $50 a week or something like that. And it was through the school. But okay, so that was the first time I was paid to do the job. But for my first job at a commercial radio station or anything, I had internships before this, but the first time I was paid was at this radio station, 1040 AM WYSL in Rochester. And I was the pregame and postgame host of the Rochester Rhinos, who were at that time the A-League, which was under MLS. and now is the USL, which again is kind of like a feeder system. And I went to back to just drive by the radio station because we were up in that area, and that's like 4.5 hours away from here, so I never really get to go by there. And it's this kind of little radio station in what's kind of a modular home in the middle of the countryside with a couple of antennas outside of it. And it just reminded me of all these memories that I had of like my first job and not knowing if anybody was listening and worrying that I was doing a bad job and all this type of stuff. And I was going to ask you, since you and I had very similar paths through, you know, the industry, what was your first paid job out of school?
My first paid job was, I guess, technically the summer after I graduated Fordham, which was 2002. That summer, I worked as board op, technical director slash like update anchor kind of guy for the U.S. Open tennis on the radio. They did their own radio broadcast of the tournament in addition to the normal TV coverage back then, which was USA and CBS. They did a full radio broadcast, and Spiro Dedis, who is now uber famous, voice of the Knicks, the Lakers at CBS, doing football now, obviously, he had done it the year before, so that opened up the connection to Fordham. So while Spiro was like the main guy, I was the guy that got them on the air. I would come in and read the other scores to them while they were focused on one particular match. I would give Spiro a break every once in a while. Once we got the hang of it, they didn't necessarily, and you've probably run into this, describe all the time exactly what they wanted us to do. And there were times where both Spiro and I thought, and maybe this is on us and not them, that we were just playing court sounds. So you would just hear like the chair umpire go 15-30, and then you hear like thwop and boom, 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 and then the crowd would cheer, and then 30 all. And then it took about, I don't know, a half an hour for our boss to come running in and go, one of you has to talk. So then we talked. Spiro did most of the talking. So that was my first paycheck, and it was actually for 2.5 weeks of work. It was a really nice paycheck that then kind of spoiled me for my next round of jobs because nobody paid like that. But that's the first thing I did for money onto a microphone after school.
So I don't know if I ever knew this. There's tennis on the radio?
So I did that. That was 2002. Then Spiro became Spiro to a certain extent, and I became the main guy the year after. So I called Andy Roddick's first and only major championship, an early Federer win. I think Leighton Hewitt won one year and I was there.
So you did tennis play-by-play?
So we were at the top of Arthur Ashe Stadium, right next to the international TV feed. The actual TV guys that you would see on CBS and USA Today, they sit right behind the court, which I'm sure if you're a tennis fan, you've seen. But we were up high, and we did tennis on the radio exactly like you would do basketball or baseball, like serving from the near baseline into the deuce court, down the doubles alley, cross court backhand into forehand slice. Sampras comes to the net, and he puts it in the net. And yeah,
that's a talent.
We did that nonstop for 14 days. And then it got me. IBM was the technological brain of the operation. They picked up and did the same thing at the French Open, and they brought me with them in 2005 and 2006. I went with my U.S. Open partner. We went and spent 2.5 weeks for back-to-back summers in Paris doing the same thing at the French Open.
That's amazing. A trip to Paris?
Yeah. Yep. And it's even bigger at Wimbledon. Wimbledon Radio is on, they have a central feed that takes you all around the ground. And then like TV, they have people at individual courts. I believe at one point, Wimbledon Radio had 5 different feeds going that you could get online and on actual like car radios.
Wow.
People would listen. That's how much they love tennis and how entrenched the radio side of it is as well. But yeah, I did it for 5 U.S. Opens, 2 French Opens.
So look at this. Bogish, his first paid job out of college is calling Andy Roddick matches of the U.S. Open, and mine was doing the pregame for the Rochester Rhinos and the Charleston Battery of the A-League Soccer. I mean, talk about two different paths here. I mean, you actually had some juice.
Tennis is nuts, man. I love tennis, and it's super. And like when you're there, like you're in it. And then working there made me connections elsewhere. And I have covered events in Ohio, in DC, in Florida. There were times where I worked for like an international like group. It was my job to be there, do interviews, tape press conferences, and send stuff back to people. And I'd have to go up to like the PR rep or the player himself, legit players like Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, and ask them a question and have them answer in multiple languages. Like Nadal, I'd ask Nadal one question and he would answer in English, take a break, and then answer in Spanish. Federer could do English, French, Swiss, German, and Afrikaans, which is what they speak in South Africa, which is where he's originally from. So then I would go back to my desk, and I can't translate any of that, so I would just grab the entirety of the audio and send it to these people and then let them use it. But and one time in Cincinnati, I did it, and I angered the entire press corps completely innocently. They thought I was stealing their audio, but it was a press conference. And you ask a question at a press conference, anyone can use the audio. They thought it was somehow only to them. So after like a day and a half in, the guy came over from the ATP, and he was like, I know you're doing nothing wrong, but like there's about 9 French journalists who are mad at you right now, so I'm going to set you aside. You get what you want from these guys, and then just leave the room, and then they're going to take over, and they can do, and they'll use their audio however they want. So I said, okay, fine. So I got my own little mini interviews with these guys to not anger anybody else, and then went back to my desk and did my business.
So unfortunately, you started out doing amazing things, which probably jaded you for all the crappy job that you've had since. Whereas for me, yeah, I had my crappiest job first, and everything after that felt like a real step up. Like when I went from a little station in the middle of the countryside, a half hour outside of Rochester, New York, to Fort Myers, Florida, even though we were one of only 3 employees there and making $18,000 a year, I'm like, huge step up. When I then became the night show host in Kansas City, I'm like, huge step up. And so every other thing seemed to be better. But for you, you went from interviewing Roger Federer as your first job to now co-hosting with Mraz, talking about what he ate for the weekend.
Right. Talking to Roger Federer in 3 languages, talking to Mraz in like half of one.
50% of his native language.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we've discussed it. I've only gone downhill, even going back as far as Fordham's radio station. When I was there, I was covering the Mets. I was on the field after they beat the Cardinals to win the National League to send them to the Subway Series. I was there as they were getting up from their pig pile on the mound with my mic out. I was at the first Ranger game post 9/11 when Mark Messier is getting a passed away fireman's hat from the fire chief, and the entire building is crying, and the national anthem's playing. Messi has got tears going down his face, and now I have to listen to Mraz wonder about, again, baby rabbits, and where's the salt go, and how to say amicable.
It's got to be devastating for you to see.
It's not devastating, well, not daily devastating, but there are low points, that's for sure.
There are emotional lows that come with working in the current job. That's amazing. Okay, well, I had a little favor. Do you think that you could interview Connor for Side B and see where his confidence level is at? I don't want you to let him know that we think very highly of him. I just want to see if he's starting to feel himself at all or if he's still putting his head down and being a good, hard worker bee.
Yeah, and I'll have to get a little inside info from Bilotti since he actually sees Connor. You know, Bilotti maybe can give me the real up-close scouting report before I talk to him so I know exactly what to ask in case Bilotti's noticed a couple of things that might be worth mentioning.
Yeah, exactly. Let's throw a little curveball at him. Let's see how he handles this. So, all right, very good. That is Side A. We'll hear now Side B.
Hello, hello, and welcome inside Side B of the PGP, the show about the show, been within the show. I don't pay attention when Sean usually intros this segment, so I know I'm getting the catchphrase wrong. I'm really bad at these things. I should by now basically be able to recite word for word, whether it's on the actual show with DA or Sean's cute little sayings here inside B of the PGP. But again, I don't pay enough attention. And even if I did, my memory is terrible. I could have learned all of this yesterday and it would be gone this morning. So it's Bogish and it's Connor Green this week with Shawnee continuing to be on vacation. Just got to hang out. I did with DA on side A. And now, for, I think for the first time ever, I'm in charge here on side B. And in my crosshairs, in our crosshairs today, is the one and only Connor Green. I called him Andres Jimenez of radio broadcasting yesterday, Mets up-and-coming infielder. That might be a little too specific of a reference for some of you. So just find some upstart phenom that has burst onto the scene. The ceiling is unlimited, and that is Connor Green. Connor, it's been a meteoric rise for you, young man. How are you handling it both in the studio and outside the studio when you're out in the general public?
Well, you know, Andrew, my ego has gotten incredibly large. You know, I went to the grocery store the other day. They didn't have any paper towels. And I said, do you know who I am? I'm the guy that did Canadian bacon two times. So my ego has gotten extremely large. But it's been a good time to be able to get on the air. I really appreciate it. And I hope I'm handling it pretty well. I guess you'll have to ask Pete back here at the studio.
Yeah, I'm not going to ask Pete. It just doesn't really matter what Pete thinks here. And to be honest, and I've self-admitted this, I'm very good at petty jealousy. I own it, whether it's against a team that's better than mine, whether it's people who have jobs I want to have or wish I had or think I should have over them. So I can be guilty of this too, but I just wouldn't trust Pete's opinion on anything here because he probably is irrationally angry at you for getting to do Canadian bacon and other things. So whatever I asked him, his answer would be basically negligible because it just wouldn't have been an objective sentence from Pete. But I do want to, you know, get back to where we are with you here because I think this is the important thing to do, Connor, when you're starting out, is to be open to anything. And then when you get a chance to do it, you got to hit a home run. And you keep, for the most part, at least hitting triples, if not home runs, because you're 2 for 2 so far this week, pending Wednesday's show on Canadian Bacon. We got our first glimpse at Your Majesty during Trash Tuesdays along the way. And now here we are again with you on the verge of maybe full-on taking some responsibilities off of Sean's plate. So what's your mindset like at, say, 5:45, right before the show? Your producing duties are in line because you're not waiting the last second to do them. You sent the topic sheet out very early now, the day before. You are ready to go with sound check and everything else. How do you get yourself pumped up for actual airtime?
Well, with Canadian Bacon, I normally have like a decent idea of what I want to go in with the night before once I watch some of the games and have a good idea of, you know, some of the guys I want to talk about. And then, you know, at 5:45, I'll just write down some of the ideas that I have for maybe some jokes that hopefully would be funny. It's kind of the same thing I'll do with Trash Tuesday. I'll go in with some idea of what I want to say and maybe jot down a couple of ideas just so when I get on, I have something that I know might be funny. And then I like to drink a Red Bull because I'm a big Red Bull guy. And that's not actually just to go on the air. I'm just a big caffeine guy in general. So I'll do those things to just try to get ready and then just kind of let it rip. And hopefully people think whatever I do is funny. Sometimes I think they are. Maybe sometimes they're not. But that's generally speaking how I try to get at least a little bit ready just so I have something when I go on that I feel like maybe is funny and I don't just ramble and go on or anything like that.
Now, I have had fun once or twice at your expense because you're especially a Trash Tuesday situation where you have things written down, which is a very good idea, but it's not none of us write our trashes down, as you can sometimes hear as we deliver them terribly on the air. So what's the writing process like for you? Like, just use this, go back to your virtual fan Trash Tuesday, which I think was last week at this point. And, like, how long did it take you to get there? Are you workshopping things? Do you have friends listen to them to kind of give you some kind of critique? Just take me through the Connor process.
No, for the most part, I'll just think of something the night before. And then when I get in the morning, I'll just jot down a couple of ideas. And the reason that I do that is because I don't, like, have a full-time on-air role here or anywhere else. And my Trash Tuesday might be, like, maybe a minute or, like, a minute and a half or a little bit less than that. So I figure I want to make it count when I go on the air, and I feel like if I went on and just went off the top of my head, I don't think it would be terrible, but I don't necessarily know if it would be all that great. So I generally like to just jot things down because I only have a little bit of time, so I want to try to make it count, and when DA tosses to me, I want to have something to go to that I think might be funny, that I've thought of a little bit, that I've put a little effort into. So that's the reason I do jot a couple of things down. But I normally have like an idea of maybe something the night before, and then about 20 minutes before, like Trash Tuesday, I'll just jot a couple of things down, and then hopefully when I go on the air, it's a little bit something that might make you guys laugh a little bit.
Now, have you heard from any virtual fans since that trash thanking you for your support?
I've gotten a lot of support from the virtual fan community. They
really
don't have many voices in the media. You know, a lot of guys are more focused on the real fans. But I think you have to have somebody out there for the common blue-collar virtual fan out there. And I've gotten a lot of great feedback from them on that trash.
Well, and I think it's important, too, to be on, you know, kind of selfish for a second. From our vantage point, it's just, it's good to know people are listening and hear you, right? Because sometimes, and the more and more you're on the air, and soon you'll have your own show, so you'll feel it, you know, somewhat often. Like, it's just, there are times where there's not a response that you would like to get from a talking point or a tweet or whatever it may be. And you wonder sometimes, is anybody out there? So it's good when somebody, even to a negative extent, I mean, somebody called me a jerk the other day, but at least I know that they're paying attention, right? So, like, it's good to hear back from somebody to get some little bit of validation sometimes.
Yeah, I guess you'd always want to get some sort of reaction, even if it is negative. Like, I think the worst thing is probably just to get absolutely no reaction whatsoever, because then it's just like, okay, people are listening, but they don't really have a strong opinion one way or the other. So that's why when people, like, get crazy on Twitter, and I think Twitter can sometimes be, like, a bizarro world. So for you guys that are on the air all the time, and if you do get negative feedback, I almost feel like that's better than getting absolutely no feedback at all. Because at least you're, like, moving the needle one way or the other.
Let's go back to how you've handled now this real surge up the hierarchy at both the show specifically, but the bigger picture at CBS Sports Radio. Is it fair to say that a game plan of yours would just to see what Sean does on a daily basis and maybe not necessarily do the opposite of that, but just not do exactly what he does? Is that kind of how you sculpt what you're trying to accomplish?
Well, I try to maybe carry myself a little bit different than Sean. I think we have like a little bit of different personalities. Like Sean is maybe the most laid back person that I've ever met. Like, he can just go on the air and say whatever and not care about it whatsoever. He can have an oopsie during a PGP. Like, if I did that during a PGP, I would be humiliated. I would, like, go home and I'd be, like, calling my parents, like, oh, my God, I can't believe what I did. Sean did it. I don't think Sean cared whatsoever about it. So, like, Sean's personality is a little bit different than mine in that I try to maybe, like, come across a little bit more serious about things. But I think it works with Sean in a lot of ways. I think, like, you know, the fact that he's so laid back and easygoing might come across as him being lazy. And I think there's certain situations maybe he is like that. But I think it works perfectly with him and DA in that regard.
Yeah, you know, it sounds kind of like a compliment. And there are times, I guess, where I do wish I cared less about, like, what other people thought of me or the way I sounded out loud. So, like, it seems almost like it's a plus for Sean, but really at the end of the day, Connor, he should be embarrassed that he had an accident in his pants post-30, whether he's a dad or not. So, like, and I guess in theory it could happen, and it's not necessarily his fault, but I feel like the celebratory nature of that day is really where the issue lies. Is it happens, okay, fine, you got to go running away from the podcast recording, but then while you're cleaning yourself up, you need to be devising a plan to cover yourself here, to hide the embarrassment, to hide the shame, to make sure nobody knows what happened, yet he couldn't wait to tell me and you and Pete and America and a podcast audience and a radio audience exactly what he had done. That's the unbelievable part to me.
I think, like, a lot of people in life care way too much about what other people think, But I think there does have to be like a happy medium. I think you have to care at least a little bit about what other people think. Because otherwise,
especially when it comes to accidents.
Right. Do accidents on the air. Maybe you should care at least a little bit about that. I think there has to be a little bit of a medium where, like, you don't care too much about what people think, but you also don't care absolutely not at all about what people think. Because when you care not at all, then sometimes what happens is you have an accident on the air and it winds up being a huge talking point on the show.
So what does, enough about Sean, back to you here to close. What does Connor Green want to be when he grows up?
I don't know. I mean, I've thought about it. I think it's really hard to ever really, like, get to a point where you have one single thing you want to do because, like, the business changes so much. And even in the last, like, 4 months, you've seen a huge change, not only around here, but, like, around the sports media industry in general, where, like, a lot of stuff is now digital, even with, like, papers now, most of the stuff is online. And with broadcasting, a lot of stuff is different. So, like, for me, I don't really have a particular goal in mind of what I want to do. There are things that I would really like to do. Like, I'd love to be the play-by-play voice for the New York Yankees, but I think that might be a little bit of a lofty goal to go after.
That's okay.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I don't have anything in particular in mind. I've always just kind of thought, like, if you go in, you work hard, you do good work, you know, you're generally easy to work with. I feel that, like, something along the line will happen eventually for you. So that's kind of been my mindset really since I started here, which was about 3 years ago now.
So if I'm listening correctly and reading between the lines, you're actually just toying with us by being so good at all of our jobs because you don't actually necessarily want any of our jobs, but you're still shaming us by your performance at our jobs. Like, I'd be more comfortable if you had just said, I want to host a show and have a pseudo lazy but entertaining sidekick producer, an average update anchor, and an angry average technical director like Pete Bilotti. Like, if your specific goal was to take this all away from us, I'd actually appreciate it more than you just saying, I don't know what I want to do. In the meantime, I'm going to embarrass the four of you by being better than all of you collectively. I'm a little...
No, that's not what I meant.
Insult is the right word, but this is a little perturbing, Connor. I've got to be honest.
Well, I would love to have any one of your guys' jobs or a similar role to that around here, but I don't think those jobs are opening up anytime soon. And with the way the schedule...
Oh, you never know, Connor.
I guess you never know. But, like, I just hope a lot of the times that when I look at the schedule that Pete gives me shifts. So it's hard for me to be like, well, yeah, I just want to be on the air and I want to do this and that. I'm happy a lot of times to just get like 5 days of work in a week being part-time. So I don't want to come across as being like too cocky and like, oh, you know, I'd love to do like afternoon drive and something like that. Like, obviously that would be something I would love to do, but I mean, I don't know if that would ever happen. And I just hope that like something along the line happens where I can just get a full-time gig around here.
All right, well, we have an actual radio show to do, so you're going to go. I'm going to go. Say hi to Pete for me, Connor. And again, just give us a little more time. I have kids to feed, college to pay for, so before you take everything away from all of us, just slow down your roll just a tiny little bit. You can follow Connor Green on Twitter at?
At Connor_Green51.
Is there one N or two N's in Connor?
There's one N. People always get that wrong. They always spell my name wrong. It's Connor with one N and green like the color. No E at the end of it.
Gotcha. And I'm at Andrew Bogish, of course, at Meraz CBS. If you need to bother him while he's on vacation or be overwhelmed by his vacation pictures, you know where to find this podcast and the full DA show. We'll see you again next time on Side B of the PGP.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.